Madam Chair, the City and County of San Francisco.
Mary Ann Carroll here.
County of Alameda.
Bruce Lucia here.
City and County of San Francisco.
Daniel Bray, morning.
City of Logan.
Jessica File here.
City of San Jose.
River here.
David cannot make it from County of Santa Clara. County of Contra Costa. County of Marin.
Craig Scribbian here.
County of Monterey.
Good morning, Chris Malkin over here.
County of San Mateo. They're not present. And County of Sonoma.
Chris Copley here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
All right. Our next item is approval of the minutes. So opening it up to my approval for your partners here. The overall funding, which this year, last year, was $615 million. In the UWASI, NOFO, they had the same amount of national priority projects. They added one, and that is election security, so there's six of them. Five of them required a minimum spend of 3%, so it's a total of 15%. And then in the NOFO, there's 50% can be spread among those six. So there's a total of 30% that is dictated towards these national priority areas. And in the report, I have listed information and sharing, soft targets, cybersecurity, community preparedness, domestic violent extremism, and election security. And then in the NOFO, they also increased the LECTA fund. And that is for the law enforcement terrorism prevention activities from 30% to 35%. Moving into our item number B, the UWASI risk profile, that went down a little bit. We went from four to five in our threat score. And the two areas that we're coordinating with the NIC and forming a working group is cybersecurity. We dropped in that area. which doesn't really make sense because the Bay Area has seen a lot of cyber crimes, and according to the state, we're one of the top cities in the United States that had a lot of cyber ransomware and so forth. And then the other one is transnational organized crime, and that doesn't kind of make sense because we've seen an increase of fentanyl, and that is tied, and we confirmed with our perfusion center as well, tied to the transnet organized crime activities. So we right now are going to look at the data sources, form a working group, and then the data call opens up in June to September. That's when the DHS accepts all the data coming from the threat report. The other thing is the Homeland Security Conference is in July 24th through July 27th in Chicago. If you're interested in attending, please let us know. And also, you have to register online, and there's a link in my report. It's going to be in Chicago at the Hyatt, and in these larger cities, the block of rooms go very quickly. And of course, the members of the approval authority and your alternates, it is rent funded for your travel. The other item is just an update regarding our management team. A lot of our folks kind of promoted up, and there's some new folks here. I just want to briefly introduce them to you. First of all, the UWASI Senior Management Assistant position, Jackie, who helped with our new meeting, has moved into the grant specialist, and we hired two new folks. One is here learning the ropes, Lavina Santos, who has worked for many years as a management assistant at DEN. She's going to be missed tremendously, but she still is working within the Department of Emergency Management. And the other person is Leo Samuelson, who starts a little later, and he can be helping with our website and our IT head office duties as well. The other two folks that we've hired is Angela Hung, a grant specialist, and Selena Ng.
She's on her way.
And both of them are grant specialists working on our grant program. Dominic Yin had left to for a promoted opportunity in the private sector, but we have Dave Rocha, who's now the program manager for the Securing the Cities program. And we're backfilling his position. We're working with the DHR to do so. And I believe that just there's an announcement that that is open, and hopefully we can fill that as quickly as possible. And then Meredith Terrell, I know Meredith is here. She is our UWASI Community Preparedness Analyst. She has a ton of experience, working with and collaborating with the nonprofits in the region and all the whole community agencies, and she's going to be working on both the UWASI side fund as well as the regional catastrophic preparedness grant. And then moving on to the tracking tool, our next meeting is going to be in June, and at that meeting we have, pursuant to our bylaws, we present our annual budget, our org chart for the organization, our work plans, and then we present our annual report. And then we also will have our program updates of our various different grant programs, as well as our risk management program and financial grant fund report, and then the threat briefing again from our net grant. So that concludes the GM report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. It's new. And Gina, it's been, I don't know what we're going to do without her at Church Street. She's super instrumental in keeping the 911 center running, but super excited.
funding is approximately $453,000. So this is the second year that we have seen a drop in the total allocation to the Bay Area UIC since the introduction of the National Priority Projects. Again, repeating what our general manager mentioned, we have six categories for the national project. We are allocating funds to all categories. The NOFO requires 30% set aside, that's about $8.9 million from the total allocation to be dedicated to these national priorities. And I believe Janelle is presenting them today. Basically, my report tells us how the numbers are being divided. So we are able to sustain the same funding level as last year for the core cities funding, the management team budget, and the hub project. Same with the funding for NCRIC and BayTech. And you may wonder why, how we're able to do this. We are leveraging dollars set aside for the NPP, and we're just showing them part of NCRIC and BayTech's budget as NPP. So although the total allocation for the hubs remain the same, the budget for each changed minimally based on the revised risk profile that we presented to you back in November. I think that's all I have for you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions? Okay.
I would just highlight that in discussing our internal budgets as a government agency, we've been looking at the cumulative effects of inflation over time. Now that inflation is now a factor again, and so we're looking at the real purchasing power, comparing the current budget, for example. Even though we've got a hard reduction in the allocations in the UIC, we're also seeing an indirect reduction in our purchasing power over time, and DHS is now picking up on that. So we're actually looking at maybe 10% reduction,
possibly just
in power over the last few years.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, so the economic impact is there on the inflation.
Just if you want to hire somebody.
Okay, we can open to public comment. If we have anyone? Any, we can move on to action.
It's an action.
Let's take some action. Do I have a motion to approve this item, which details the allocations for the US grants? Just I have a motion to approve as presented. I can second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we can move on. All right, our next item is Janelle is going to present the National Priority Project for 2023.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and hello to the approval authority members this morning. So I'm Chris here to present item 5 to you. This is going to review our FY23 National Priority Projects. It is an action item, so I'll ask for action at the end, and it will be to approve the project scope and funding amounts for the different priority areas. So this item should be in front of you. It builds on what our general manager has already discussed, as well as Tristan, our CFO. The item essentially is in front of you, so I won't do a lot of reading off of it, but what this item talks about is that 30% dollar amount that Tristan mentioned and sort of and its allocation into the various 5 required areas. We do have 6 areas we can fund. So the 5 areas that are required funding, you can see on the table here which ones have the 3% requirement, which is $892,260. So it's almost $1 million in those areas. What it does by requiring 5 areas to be funded at a 3% level, that's 15%. That leaves us discretionary funding to spread between all the other national priority areas. As our stakeholders and our subject matter experts have given us input on. So, to remind everyone, the national priority areas are essentially, we've gone to our regional work group members for feedback. We've talked to our FEMA technical assistance points of contact for guidance. We've looked at our fiber spur. All of these are requirements. Well, the fiber spur is a requirement in the NOSO to be able to develop these project descriptions. And at this point, after that, we'll go forward with project planning and project scoping, and we'll continue to engage our stakeholders in the Bay Area to ensure everyone is aligned. We're aligned with things that are needed out in the region. So essentially, what I'd like to do is ask you to go over the scopes of the projects or the project descriptions very briefly, and then I'll take you to the table on the last page, which is approving the funding amounts. So, table one, national priority project, enhancing information and intelligence sharing. That funds our NICRIC. You see the description there. So that's the first national priority area. The next one is enhancing election security. This is an equipment project. We have used this equipment as a procure in the FY20 election security project. We've now crafted or developed a work group getting feedback on this. This equipment is well regarded and well received, so we want to expand it into the Bay Area. These are mobile barrier trailer kits that are locally sourced, and so there's no supply chain problems. So we are going to get them, expand them into other areas of the Bay Area. Then the next one is enhancing the protection of soft targets in crowded places. There's another equipment project where there's a state upgrade required for our sea burn protection gear and equipment, chem bio, rad nuke, and explosive. So we would look to procure equipment there, working directly with our stakeholders. Next national priority area is community preparedness and resilience. So here, last year was the first year we had that national priority area. Corinne Baytek is managing this through Corinne and her staff, and Mary will be a key member here. But what we're doing here, and especially after talking to our FEMA reps, recognizing that community resilience, it really takes time to continue to get into the underserved areas to create equitability in the smaller businesses and neighborhood businesses. So we'll be looking to build on what we've learned last year and continue to move those project impacts and deliverables forward. So you can see there's two projects there, and then there's one project with community crisis communications, where we'll be creating more equity in the dissemination of public information at the community level. So we'll be working through our public information and warning work group there. Combating domestic violent extremism is the next national priority area. This is managed by Jody Travestero and aligns with our TVTP, Targeting Violence and Terrorism Protection Program. So with these projects, we are coordinating trainings with the NICRIC and schools to develop continued awareness in this area. There's also initiatives to address gaps in the DVE awareness and through cultural competency, and also reaching deeper and further into rural areas. And then the last item is enhancing cybersecurity. This is not a required area, but we always like to make sure we have cybersecurity in our region, and we'll be doing this through the BayTech program. So that's an overview of the projects. If you go to the table two on the last page, you'll see the breakdown of allocated amounts we are recommending. You can see the total amount is the $8,922,603. You can see on the farthest left-hand column the required amount at 3% that we are fulfilling that allocation requirement, and then the eligible discretionary 15%, how we allocated it throughout the priority areas. One last thing these numbers are dependent on the retention funds remaining the same as last year from Pop OES at 18.5. So if there's any changes there, we'll make sure to report back to you.
Center. The required shows the 892 for the enhanced intelligence and the eligible of the 2.2 million. I'm just gonna, I want to make sure that we're funding the cyber component of that, especially the threat intelligence gathering and information distribution, because it's not categorized as cybersecurity. So I just wanted to make sure that Mike's got everything he needs to keep them up. Got a thumbs up.
I had a question about the equipment for the election security. How does that, so that's a regional asset, but how does that work?
It's regionally procured, and they will procure it through the office. The training will be coordinated through our security forces, and Dave Rocha is going to manage the deployment and distribution. But is that the question?
Is that by, and so it's, is it by like the jurisdiction and the quest? I realize like how much I don't feel like know how this works, but
so region.
Good morning. So Dave Roach. So this is one of the projects I'm managing. So currently we're getting 15 trailer kits. Each trailer kit has 8 barriers. So we've asked agencies. Some agencies are saying, or counties, op areas are saying that they're not interested. They're typically going to law enforcement agencies that will be able to deploy them for the register of voters in different counties. They'll likely be used where there's drive-through drop-off, because the way the barriers are set up. And then I think the reality is they'll likely be used for farmers markets and all sorts of other things, you know, throughout the year.
Okay.
Okay.
Further any public comment? So, seeing none, and no more comments, can I get a motion to approve this?
Daniel Pereira, Francis Conley, motion to approve.
Thank you. Can you get a second?
Second, Ms. Godley.
Thank you, Chris. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Hearing none. We're good. Thank you. Okay, and the next item, we're going to be getting our grant program update. Janelle will MC this item.
Hello again. So I am here to introduce our four program, our four leads for the programs, the grant programs update. We do this quarterly for you. I'm going to ask Prim Hartshire to come up and talk about the area training and exercise program. She'll then pass it to Christoph Arnold, who will talk about our CPGP program, who will then pass it to Dave Rocha, Secure the Cities, and then lastly, Jody Travisero, Harvey Brown.
Thanks, Janelle. Good morning. 2023 is off to a great start for the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program. We have over 160 courses planned through our integrated preparedness planning efforts, and then more trainings are being added through our national priority projects as well. Here's a sneak peek on this year's key exercise events, which we'll talk a little bit more about. As an update through the first quarter, through the end of this month, we're projecting 27 courses will be delivered to nearly 800 student participants across the disciplines. You can see the breakdown there at the bottom of the slide, and the map shows the number of in-person trainings that have been conducted in each of our UAC member jurisdictions. We haven't yet rolled out any public health or cybersecurity courses this year, but they are coming. We have some later this month and in April. Upcoming courses, of course, can be viewed at baytep.org. If anybody has any questions on how to register and see the available courses, certainly reach out to us. I think some of the more exciting news for this time of year in this update is our exercise program and what's coming up for this year. We, in January and early February, completed a hazardous materials operational readiness drill series at four sites around the Bay Area with a total of 19 participating teams. They practiced identifying unknown materials and conducted a medical intervention exercise. So we'll have an after-action report for those coming soon. And then we have the annual Golden Eagle exercise coming up in May, and that is, of course, our annual opportunity for Bay Area agencies to practice regional coordination, collaboration with state agencies in a simulated disaster response. This year, we're focusing on the monkeypox pandemic. It lines up with our regional catastrophic preparedness grant program capability building that we've been doing over the last year. And then we've added simultaneous wildfires to truly replicate the real world that you all live in, where it's not just one disaster at a time. So I understand Contra Costa County is planning to integrate our updated care and shelter toolkit into the Golden Eagle exercise. The Bay Area Joint Information System will be activating for public information officers to continue practicing their functions and their collaboration with each other around the region, and utilizing the new crisis communications online toolkit, searchable, prescripted messages that we now have on the Bay Area UIC website. The Golden Eagle final planning meeting is April 20th, and the exercise is May 18th. And just a note, next year's Golden Eagle exercise, which will have a May date coming out soon for you, will focus on supply chain resilience. So you can put that in the back of your brains. We'll have a local tabletop exercise series in the early part of the year leading up to the May functional Golden Eagle exercise for 2024. And then we're also working with your agencies and partners on an active attacker exercise series. We conducted concepts and objectives meetings, and our purpose here with this is to bring an opportunity to each of your jurisdictions to review and practice policies and protocols for responding to an active attacker scenario. In the short term, we're offering each UIC member jurisdiction a customized tabletop exercise. We're encouraging operational areas to engage partner agencies from the incorporated cities, special districts, non-governmental sector as appropriate. We heard a lot in the concepts and objectives meetings, especially from law enforcement agencies, that they want to practice with partner agencies, practice that interoperable communications and understanding how their agencies will support each other. Following those, we'll work with each hub, North Bay, East Bay, South Bay, West Bay, to design, conduct, and evaluate a functional full-scale exercise. The vision here is maybe one location where there can be a hands-on tactical law enforcement drill for active attacker, and then adding on any other components, if it's an emergency operations center, a family assistance center, reunification, whatever other protocols partner agencies might want to practice in relation to an active attacker scenario. And Captain Daniels is here. He is the one championing our active attacker exercise series. And then finally, our 2023 Public Safety Preparedness Summit is scheduled for November 14th through 16th. We are aware that this overlaps with the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation APEC Summit, and we've explored available alternative dates. We've consulted with some of you on the approval authority, and given all the options at hand, we have made the informed decision to keep the dates as originally scheduled. So let me know if you have any questions on that. We have posted a sponsorship prospectus to our website, so consider this announcement our public appeal for corporate sponsorships to support the summit activities. Our summit will feature on Tuesday, November 14th, a training day where BayTEP will bring several related training courses on site for attendees to participate in. And then Wednesday, Thursday, the 15th and 16th will be the discipline-specific seminars of mass notification, securing the city, cyber resilience. And we have added and domestic violent extremism. And this year we are adding a grants management seminar as well.
Hey, can I just ask, So I know you guys, I'm assuming you've vetted the date of this and everything, and you're not worried about lodging and
We have the Marines Memorial Club and Hotel booked and a room block at the hotel for our attendees, so I think that will cover us for anybody coming in from the nation. And with the alternatives being either travel the week after Thanksgiving or conflicting with the IAEM conference, which many of our agencies are sending staff to, we did talk with the NCRIC about, you know, what the crowds and the security level and everything means, and landed on staying the course. So with that, I will be available for questions after this item. I will now turn it over to Christoph.
Good morning, everyone. Christoph Arno here to give you the updates on the Regional Catastrophic Preparedness Grant Program. So there's four grants on the go right now. The first one is the FY19 CPOD project. So CPOD is Community Point of Distributions. So the updates or completed activities here are that we've been working with the 14 member UASI jurisdictions and to create our CPOD site plans. Those plans include the ICS 213RR forms that are pre-populated. So essentially those are forms that have all the anticipated resource needs for those sites to operate them during distribution. We have also been developed and conducted trainings. These are the disaster logistics trainings, as well as the CPOD operations and management trainings. In this grant, we've conducted a bunch of them last year, and there's a few upcoming in April, and those will be conducted through the BATEP program. So reach out to Matt or Corinne if you want anybody in your staff to get put on those. In terms of guidance and planning, so there's a whole bunch of templates and toolkits that are available on our Bay Area UASI website. And we will be handing out that link and so on during the emergency management work group meeting on next Thursday at 1 p.m. Underway, so there's the CPOD toolkit updates. So this is going to have the new features are going to be a GIS location of all the different CPOD sites within the Bay Area. And there's also all the templates and tools that have been updated that will be included within that toolkit, which is, again, going to be available on our Bay Area UASI website. And I already went through the training, so let's go to the next. Well, that didn't work out. There we go. All right. The next project is the Pandemic Preparedness Project. This one we are pretty close to wrapping up, so happy to put this pandemic behind us. The completed activities on this one that are really to put forth today is that our regional or region-wide COVID AAR and pandemic framework are now available and have been released. They are on our website. We have finalized and updated the revised mass care and shelter planning toolkit. That's the one that Corinne mentioned that Contra Costa will be using during the Golden Eagle exercise this year. So that is also available on our website. We have developed what we call the pandemic, or actually we're going to scratch that pandemic, but right, it's going to be called the Crisis Communication Toolkit. This is essentially a public information and warning PIO, fully researchable, searchable library online website where you can go and take any kind of public information and warning that you need to send out to your communities. It's translated in a whole bunch of different languages. And we're going to take out the pandemic because we're going to change that with multi-hazard as we go forward. So right now, it's currently limited to pandemic resources, but we are going to add wildfires and everything else that comes along, including extreme weather events in the future. And we have also finalized the update of the California Region 2 MAC, so that's the medical and health multi-agency coordination guide. which is available on Abajo, but will also be available on the Bay Area UASI website. So just on the right side of the screen is where all these resources are able to be found. So again, I will send out the link for this during our emergency management work group meeting tomorrow, next Thursday. But if you go on the Bay Area UASI website and you go under programs, the first item in the drop-down list is catastrophic planning, and then it gives you all the resources and they're all in there. So please do share that with your teams because it's a wealth of resources. Underway, we are just finalizing the scarce resource allocation guide. It has a pandemic focus, but it also focuses on other pathways and flows for scarce resource allocation within the region. We have long-term care facilities training, which is going to be done through CAF, and that's coming up in April, specifically in Santa Clara County, but everybody will be able to join. And we have, of course, the Golden Eagle exercise that's upcoming, which Corinne has already briefed you on. The two following grants, we have the FY21, that's the Supply Chain Resilience Grant. We have completed the Supply Chain Resilience Planning Seminar Series. All those recordings and presentations are available for your and your staff on our website. So the same place as everything else, all under the Catastrophic Planning. Great stuff, so do encourage everybody to go and take a look at that. We are going to be now looking at a decision-making playbook, which will be basically the rally call to create our Regional Community Lifelines Council and the strategic plan that goes along with that. Currently, we are working with different entities to produce and develop a supply chains considerations guide, it's called report, for people with disabilities and access to functional needs. And of course, there's always the whole community training and then the supply chain resilience tabletop exercises series, which is going to be start with a hub series, move on to a regional exercise, and then end with a Golden Eagle next year. And finally, we have the FY22 project, which is the Equitable Community Resilience Project. We have hired a new staff. So that is Meredith right there, who will be our community preparedness specialist. And we have sent out the RFP for a contractor. And that specific project will have the same outline as all the other RCPG projects. So you have your planning tasks or activities. Specifically in this one is going to be technical assistance, also creating roadmaps to resilience at a local level and regional level. We also have our tabletop exercise series that culminates with a full-scale functional exercise, and then we have our training. And that is it. Do we have any questions? Sorry.
I have a question.
Yes. RCPGP.
that we are looking at the supply chain, that we're looking at fuel, thinking around fuel.
Well,
or anywhere in the UASI are we dealing with that?
Yes, yes. It was in one of our seminar series, and it's going to be part of the decision making playbook as well as other components of our tabletop exercise and everything. But it was mostly on food and water, but the fuel is definitely a consideration, was brought up multiple times within the seminar series. Exactly.
And
yeah.
It just came up, I was recently meeting with our Public Utilities Commission and just kind of going over the use of new people and going over some earthquake planning and that sort of thing. And, you know, I get asked about fuel and it's like, it's bad. The situation is bad and it really isn't necessarily a solution, but it would be something that it will be so critical to our region. So just to make sure that, and maybe a future exercise. I know we've done it in the past, but to kind of bring that up again. If nothing else, it's a reminder of the catastrophic impacts of that, the impact of a catastrophic event on fuel and when that
Thank you. And it is also included in the scarce resource allocation guide that we're going to be putting out. So, next up, Dave Raja.
All right. Good morning again. Dave Rocha with the Securing the Cities program here in Bay Area, UWASI. One of the things with Securing the Cities, it's a different partner group, really, than UWASI, or a different footprint, maybe, would be a better term. We cover an area that's larger than the 12 counties. So we've got Fresno, Sacramento County, Washoe County, so the Reno area that are in the group. So it's a different, when you look at the logos there, you see some different ones, and we've got some other players in terms of the airport, the port that are in, and BART, and things like that. So we just recently, or at the summit, completed our tabletop exercise. So we're moving along nicely in terms of the plan itself, and recently got the after-action review back. There wasn't a lot for us locally to change, but there were some documents that need to be changed, and CWMD oversees the program nationally, and they went from wanting to see a lot of separate documents and each plan separated, bringing them into one, which makes a whole lot more sense because people could find the document and combining with the field operations guys. So that's one of the things that came out of the tabletop for us. We are, in terms of the group that started, or regions that started about the same time, we're well ahead of them in terms of getting our tabletop done, starting to prepare for a full-scale exercise. We just found out from CWMD that they'd like to push us out in terms of the full-scale exercise to the spring of next year rather than the fall of this year. So we're moving along very nicely. We appreciate all of the involvement that agencies do have in the program and contributing to it. And we've got a few things. Equipment is on its way. We've got equipment, and we've got backpacks on their way. The backpacks are the radiation detection backpacks that we're receiving. We'll go to large, we'll call metro-sized law enforcement agencies first. We're getting 18 backpacks on this order, and then in terms of they're for a large area search, so the metro areas typically have more of a need. It is search and interdiction, so instead of including hazmat teams that are typically the fire departments or health departments, it's a law enforcement function that we want to see those, and we do have more that we're going to get in the future. One of the things that comes up with equipment quite often is that people are starting to see the equipment that we have, and they like the training. The personal radiation detectors we have are very simple to use versus some of the ones that have been purchased in the past. So agencies that are sending people to training are actually now starting to see the personal radiation detectors that we got and how simple they are, and they actually want more of them, which is a good thing because we have a number of them available, and we have the RIDs available, and we're starting to see those go out the door more, and our forecasts going forward, I think, are really good in terms of equipment as we get people trained. In terms of training, we've got a number of trainings that are coming up. One's going on this week in San Mateo County. That class filled. That's a secondary screener class. We have a train-the-trainer program that's going to be offered at the Alameda County Fairgrounds the first week in April, which is really critical to our success, and I think individual agencies participating as well, because then you could bring the training in-house, do it on a schedule that matters to you, really focus the content on something that is important for your agency. One of the things we're seeing is, because the program, the CTOS program that comes out when they do the training, is search and interdiction. The hazmat teams that are typically fire agencies while they do search, they don't do interdiction. So when you start talking about car stops and things like that, the firefighters, that's my background, we don't want any part of that. You know, we'll find it, but we don't want to go out and have to do those other parts. So we'll be able to customize programs for the agencies locally to be able to do a better job, I think, with the training. Speaking of some of our outlying agencies or agencies, Sacramento's got a class coming up in Rancho Cordova. And then there's going to be a class in Reno in May, which I understand the water flows will be really nice that time of year up in Reno or that area. So we've got some good classes are coming up. We are looking for other agencies to host, not only host classes here locally, but get people into the classes. We've had a number of classes that have been canceled because we'll have a host agency, but we'll only have three or four people that are doing in the class, and we have to bring, when today CTOS does the training, which means they're flying people in from all around pretty much the western states for the most part and out of Nevada. And once we have our trainers, we'll be able to do smaller classes and those sorts of things. But it's really critical that we not only host a class, but we get some folks in the seats as well to take the classes. Right, going forward, as I mentioned already, in terms of equipment, we've got the radiation detection backpacks that we should be getting fairly soon. CWMD did do a bit of a switch for us recently, where we were expecting Samsung tablets to get paired with the RID detectors that we have. They're going to the Toughbook. The only problem with the Toughbook is the size. The form factor is large. It's going to have its own case instead of a tablet that could actually fit inside the case with the actual RID itself. We're moving forward on purchasing both mobile and marine units. So we're working very closely with Sergeant Matthews in San Francisco and making sure that we're replacing the marine units that they've got. And it sounds like there's some question about whether we get components or we get all new. And it sounds like CWMD wants all new. So that'll, I think, make some agencies happy, but it is more expensive. One of the big things with training, and this is really kind of a surprise, is we have this program comes with overtime and backfill available to agencies that send people to the training for the time they're there, yet we're having trouble giving away the money. And everybody I know, when they're in the class, if somebody's backfilling behind them, there's money available to pay for that. If you're paying them overtime to be there, there's money available for that. So in this program, and that's one of the things we're not seeing really, I think, the appropriate amount of money flowing out of that portion of our budget. We should be seeing more. And then the rest of the year, we're going to continue to work on modifying the program management documents to fit everything into really one document, which is a lot of task work for our actual office to get done, and then working with the folks in the programs and making sure that they have the information. So, any questions? And then I'm going to turn it over to J.D. Travis Harrell. Oh, I'm sorry, any questions?
Good morning. I'm Jody Travesero, and I'm going to be providing an overview of the Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention and the Domestic Violent Extremism Prevention Programs. I will use this here. Some good news is we received some great accolades from the Research Triangle Institute, who provided its program and process evaluation of our fiscal year 20 Bay-Area-UWASI Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Program. The report does validate that the Bay-Area-UWASI achieved all of our objectives across the projects and provided, as they say, a wealth of information regarding methods to empower communities to better prevent and respond to the threat of violent extremism. This report will be made public through the Department of Homeland Security, and of course it does substantiate the continued funding of the Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Program. The in-person behavioral threat assessment and management team training is well underway. The classes have filled up quickly, and we've just today released a whole subset of new trainings. We appreciate everybody's support in getting the word out. And yes, we will be bringing one class specifically to Sonoma County, who did ask that we bring another class over. So thank you for that. The associated guidebook, we've been able to negotiate a copyright-free guidebook for schools, and it's available to anybody wishing to establish a behavioral threat assessment and management team. We have launched the Terrorist Use of the Internet training, which is a highly specialized training for everybody, but it's also being provided by an international leader in the field called Tech Against Terrorism, which is a public-private partner with the United Nations. I want to thank our NCRIC partners, of course, for helping us achieve this training program. So there are 90 spots available to be provided online, and I encourage everybody to register. The Santa Clara County Office of Education continues to work with Roblox, KQED, and the National Association of Media Literacy Education to finalize our student e-learning on media literacy. There have been both teacher-led trainings where we provided stipends to teachers to provide the training, and also the e-learning product has been shared and is being evaluated, and input is being provided across the board. We have 12 mental health film contests underway. And hopefully maybe by the next meeting I can play a little film for you to show what the students are doing. The films are submitted this month and the contests are in May. We have, under the DVE program, we've launched 15 different Safe School Ambassadors programs, which are the anti-bullying program provided by Community Matters. And in March this month, we have 7 new schools across Contra Costa, Sonoma, Solano, Napa, and Monterey who are initiating their anti-bullying programs. On January 11th, the San Mateo County Office of Education provided a safe school symposium, and it was well attended. Of course, our NCRIC partners were there, the FBI, the U.S. Secret Service, and numerous jurisdictions across the Bay Area, and this program will be replicated on April 19th in Monterey. And it will be take a full day of a 3-day youth mental health summit, which is very, it's exactly what we wanted, frankly. We're bringing schools, mental health, and law enforcement together to discuss safety and what can be done to prevent targeted violence in schools. We've launched our California Association of School Counselors gap survey, which is validating that we have significant gaps across all of our schools in implementing the U.S. Secret Service's 8-step plan to preventing targeted violence. That data will be used to justify further grant programs to help our schools build that capability to prevent targeted violence in our schools. A lot of what we're doing is called early upstream interventions, and that includes working with a trauma-informed care approach is the language I'm learning about, and it's about it has cascading benefits across that basically prevent a variety of societal challenges. So whether it's homelessness or drug abuse or suicides, it also prevents targeted violence. The NCRIC and the Bay Area UWASI continue to provide specialized law enforcement training and is scheduling a DVE symposium in Marin County. And of course, our DVE investments, as Janelle mentioned, will replicate and expand TVTP projects and build upon the evidence-based prevention frameworks across the region. With that, that's the end of my presentation. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you much. And of course, I'm never the bearer of good news, but happy to be here. And just to give you guys kind of an overview of the threats we're seeing, and there have been a lot of changes over the last few years. You know, when I started this business, at least on the information sharing side, the coordination was all about international terrorism, and then has rolled more into domestic terrorism. But when we look at our active investigations that are being conducted by the FBI, those terrorism cases have shriveled up. And everything that we're seeing right now is related to school threat, people with grievances, and we look at even our shooting in Half Moon Bay that we had recently, workplace violence, workplace grievance. We look at Michigan State, the mass casualty event they had there with 7 victims shot and 3 killed. That was incel, which probably no one has ever heard of involuntary celibate until the last 3 years. People that are focused on their hatred of women and wanting to attack people. But we have had, planned attacks like that in our own area that were thwarted. But when we look at kind of the threat actors we've got right now, it is not necessarily someone that's motivated by a foreign terrorist group. It's someone that's motivated by some extreme ideology, which is fine. We're in America. You can have extreme ideology as you want. You just can't go violent. And what we're seeing is a number of people that are planning violent attacks and violent acts. So the harder part is identifying those folks. And our friends in the Secret Service, thanks to the work that they do to protect the president, have been the best at behavioral threat assessments. And their National Threat Center has been doing that. Their National Threat Assessment Center has been looking at all the mass violent attacks over the last several years. And all the reports have started to formulate that always these groups of people that we're seeing right now that are doing these mass casualty attacks may not have any affiliation with terrorism. They are oftentimes they have some type of grievance. It may be based on political grievances lately. It may be based on societal grievances, but something that they have been wronged by somebody. And their goal ultimately is to go and do harm to people. The problem is we have a large group of people online that are being kind of radicalized. At the same time, we have a plethora of weapons, thousands of them, that are being manufactured in people's homes and sold on the street. And kids as young as 13 in our area are getting hold of ghost guns. Our friends at ATF call them privately made firearms. But with the ease of access and manufacture, some of these weapons are being built in 3 hours and sold on our streets, anywhere from $500 to $700 for a handgun and up to $2,000 for the rifles and fully automatic with the switches. So we've got a lot of weapons on the street and available to people that have a grievance, and those things are meeting. And those are the things that we want to be better able and better prepared to identify and look for. So what are we going to do about this? So one of the things that as we look at these individuals that have extremist ideologies or the children that have grievances and feel that their only way to resolve those grievances is to go to their school and shoot everybody, we've got to work, obviously, with threat mitigation teams that are multidisciplinary. And the other component of that is we've got to educate people on the threat. So one of the things that we're going to do working forward is I've just started a working group. We've got about 130 volunteers from sheriffs to chiefs of police to captains to sergeants to dispatchers. And we're going to work on developing a model with the threat mitigation teams. One, measuring what we have for threat mitigation resources in our area, where we have training gaps, where we can work with Jody's team and try to get people trained up. And the other part is how do we share information on the threats more easily and more in real time with all of our partners? So I'm working with some technology companies to be able to better do that and show and share people what's going on in our region so that they can see the threat. The other one is our threat response, which I got to tell you, it's like Groundhog Day every time I show up at a mass casualty event. We've got to get better at that, and there are ways to do that. And I'm bringing in some of our experts. I've got the former chief detective from NYPD that actually wrote the book on how to respond in an intelligence and investigative guide for the National Incident Management System. I've got the former chief of Aurora, Colorado, that was the chief when 70 people were shot at the theater. They're going to come in and help us out to work out not just something that we throw up on a shelf, but something that becomes a living tool and resource that we work on every month so that we know the plan and are able to respond and then have total situational awareness of where all our resources are at and who can respond and provide assistance with the intelligence and investigative side and component of responding to mass casualty incidents. So we're going to work on the prevention side, the threat mitigation side, and as well as the threat management side, which I also have to mention. We have a number of people within our area that we know are most likely the next folks to be the mass casualty shooter. But we have nothing to, that we can do with them because they have not committed a crime. They have voiced their opinion. We have an individual that had the assault weapon taken away from them and who is out on bail waiting for a court trial. But we have people, a number of that who are in that position, along with those that have been arrested over a decade ago for planning terrorism plots and actually building devices in our area that are going to be released back into our community. So we need to figure a way to better manage those that are known threats and how to mitigate and try to triage where we can to get those people off track from a potential plot in the future. So we'll be working on a number of those things with the working group. And this afternoon, I will send out a note inviting those folks to the next meeting, first meeting that we're going to have. And I'll also send that to the general manager so he can make sure that all of you have the link to the registration if you want to register, as well as the invite for the next call. So that's all I've got for today. Thank you.
Any questions?
I do have a question. Thank you so much for the presentation. You're talking about building a plan. Who is that plan for?
That plan is for everybody. So the plan is going to be, I'm using a lot of law enforcement to start on the plan, although it's got to be multidisciplinary because everyone has to know the plan. And everyone has to participate in the exercises and training. So that way, it's a whole community effort. And we will also need to develop things for the public as well, because they're probably our biggest group of people that can identify the threat. But we also need to make sure that every one of our disciplines in public safety, including our partners who are in the private sector that have a piece of this as well, are all part of this plan. So that's the intention, is we build a plan for everyone. We can't share everything in the plan with everybody. We can't brief everyone on the threat, but we want to make sure that this core group of people understand the threat and become our SMEs in their own right to understand how all of this works.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Mike, if I can, so it really comes down to the older paradigms, how we look at this threat. So left of boom, I'll let you handle that. But right of boom, that means once the event has occurred, the response, I've seen public safety agencies, EMS, health, struggle with how to approach this because the doctrine, if you would, is still evolving. And honestly, like you said, it's different every shooter. Well, this one was an outdoor mass gathering, but that one was inside, you know. Counties, especially sheriffs, have been struggling with protocol.
Yeah.
How do we engage not only with law enforcement in our own counties, municipal, private sector, but also now the other public safety, fire and EMS. How do we integrate them? Okay, we're going to have a war zone. Was an idea. Well, no one ever quite gets around to saying it's okay to come in now. No one's willing to say on the radio, it's safe, come in.
Yep.
And so fire and law, fire and EMS tend to get held back until the golden hour's passed and everyone's dead.
Yep.
And so now the question is, how can we, as UWASI, help develop a more uniform protocol for the Bay Area, given that we have many similar threat players and venues and that kind of stuff? Let's just face it, the feds are never going to drop one on us. The state's not going to do it. So the U.S. has been good at trying to develop doctrine. So I would encourage your working group to help provide that guidance to local law, fire, and EMS so that first hour, especially that initial response, isn't just 1,000 cops with pistols drawn. It's a more integrated response where people don't have to wait for a command officer to make decisions and lead the response, that it can become part of the culture for the public safety community, and then have UWASI resource that through, as you said, the funding, the training that's going to be needed to implement that protocol. Post 9/11, we did a lot of work on immediately developing a protocol for exotic threat events and response, which really worked out well across the Bay Area. I think if we're going to get into this, I think that's our best thing for the buck is.
Absolutely.
The people on the line, not the brass, but the sergeants, the people that are actually out there, the fire captains running the fire engine or the battalion chief, give them a chance to say, here's, I understand the concept, but we've got a protocol, and everybody that's shown up with these weird badges on the side of their doors that I've never seen before understands the same protocol.
Absolutely. We got to stop the Groundhog Day, and that's the thing I keep seeing every time. When I show up and there's five command posts, something's not right.
Yeah, and if you don't physically force law and fire to form a unified command, then somebody needs to go punish them. That's the fundamental mistake we're making now, and that has to be part of the doctrine. We've been talking about it since 2001.
Absolutely. So part of this is also going to be measurement and metrics to show that we've got good communication, that we've got good collaboration, people are participating, and we'll be able to map it out. So. You know, and I've loved doing this now. I love doing report cards that show people how well they're doing on sharing information and how they're doing in responding to events, because we have every after action I go to is the same old story, and we don't learn. So we've got to learn ahead of time, and you have to know the plan before that day. You can't read the book that day. Absolutely. You guys will get the link today. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments? Public comments? Any of these? All right. We will move on to our kind of final item. Tristan.
Thank you. Hello again. Last but not least, this agenda item is for discussion only. This report gives you a picture of how the FY22 allocations are being divided and how much funding level the recipients are. As of yesterday, the only outstanding MOUs, meaning not signed yet, are Alameda, Marin, Santa Clara, and South San Francisco. Web Branch should have released those notices for the signed MOU, the jurisdiction to start spending the funds for the FY22 projects. So if you have any question about your FY22 projects, please reach out to the assistant.
assign program managers from our management. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Opening this one up to public comments. And our next item is just for the bit of the order. Any announcements that anyone on Google 30 has?
Sure, from Monterey County, just for a second, this will be my last meeting. I really enjoyed the couple meetings I attended as the interim. We should have a director for our new department by the next meeting. So, thank you, everyone.
Oh, thank you for your participation.
Okay.
Real quick, Craig Scrubby from Monterey County. This will also be my last time here. We have a new director of our emergency services, Stephen Torrance, here. Thanks to you. I just want to introduce him. And he'll be taking over. Chris Valley, this will be my last meeting. So I now leave the last survivor title to Under Sheriff Lucia. So he hired the last one over here since the OASI was down.
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, buddy.
Wow.
So I thank the OASI Google Authority, but also the management team for keeping the flame lit on regional coordination and collaboration. Before 2001, we didn't talk to each other, rarely. There wasn't any joint anything going on. And so the OASI is the only thing that really keeps us cohesive as a barrier relative to public safety and emergency management. So the efforts I see for staff are challenging. You're talking to local jurisdictions that don't return emails, that don't pick up the phone, they don't go to your meetings or attend your training. But that's what it still takes to keep us and corral and engage with each other. So I want to thank the management team for not only doing good work, but persevering in that work. Because you're certainly not going to get public adulation for just sticking with it. So I want to say thank you, because I know what it takes to launch and manage these projects, especially dealing with, you know, local buildings and some of those participants. So on behalf of those local buildings, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. I think several of us are activating EOCs today for the storm that's coming in, so just want to say good luck to everyone. I feel like it's changing every 5 minutes. It looks like not as bad right now, but we'll see. But thanks, and as always, thank you. We are adjourned.